We love our Liberty Shirt Co. shirts, and we are sure you will too. Holiday season is almost here, and we can't think of a better gift to get your dad, brother, or best friend than a shirt that is made just for them. Liberty shirts are 100% American and made in New Jersey. They are made to order. That means you pick the style details like collar and cuffs, you put in your measurements, and they make it for you. Head over to libertyshirtco.com and save 10% off your order when you use the promo code 3PEAT. That code is 3PEAT, and you will save 10% every time you use it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast. It's actually our season finale of season two. I'm your host, Stephen Manazzo, joined with
Alex Castle
and Josh Fromowitz.
Well, even though it's our last episode this season, boys, we got a lot to talk about, especially with the NBA. The NBA draft just happened last night. Some surprising moves, some big moves. We'll talk about some of the winners and losers of it, possible sleepers who can turn into stars. And then also there's a lot more rumors going on with the NBA. Free agency starts, I believe, tomorrow. Teams can start negotiating. Players can sign the 22nd. There's been a lot of trade rumors. So a lot going on with the NBA we'll talk about. Then obviously we'll hit on the NFL, Week 10 recap, a little preview Week 11, and we'll end it all off with our weekly fantasy football segment, Stardom Sit'em. So let's get right into the NBA draft. I know we all tuned in. It was originally supposed to be in June, but we had to wait a few months, which is okay because then it gave us something to look forward to last night. Overall, I just want to kind of get your guys' opinion of what you felt with the draft. If, some of the top picks, especially Anthony Edwards went one, Wiseman went two, LaMelo went three. And then from there, it kind of was a little unexpected. So let's start off. Do you think Minnesota was smart and made the right choice in taking Anthony Edwards at one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was not a clear difference, but definitely he proved to be the best talent out of the draft class. LaMelo Ball, we mentioned last week, has the bad work ethic. And they also don't need a center because they got Cat, so they didn't need Wiseman. So I think it was kind of a no-brainer for them to take Anthony Edwards. I think they waited until the last second to submit their pick because they were toying with the idea of possibly trading, see what they could have gotten. But I feel like they knew all along that Anthony Edwards was their guy.
Castle?
Yeah, I agree with Josh. I mean, Anthony Edwards, number one recruit in Georgia out of high school going into college. He's an explosive guard. I really think he's going to mesh well with D'Angelo Russell and Cat. I really think he's going to bring an exciting offensive presence to that team. It did seem like the Wolves were spending a little too much time on their pick. I mean, you know, I guess toying with the idea of Ball maybe. I didn't see them going for Wiseman, like Josh said, because of Cat. But overall, yeah, Edwards, I had pretty much for the most part no doubt that he was going to go number one. And I'm really excited to see what he does with this Minnesota team.
That's a great point you make, Castle. And like I said last week on the show, I just didn't think pairing LaMelo with D'Angelo Russell would be the right move because those are two pretty dominant ball handlers that they need the ball in their hands to get the offensive going. Anthony Edwards is a perfect fit alongside D'Angelo Russell. So, and I know it was interesting that you guys said it took them pretty much the full time to pick, even if they knew they were going to choose Anthony Edwards the entire time, trying to see if any trades could happen. And because I know all week and even the past couple weeks, there was a lot of rumors that Minnesota could move out at number one, but I think they decided that, you know what, maybe it's just better for us to pick at number one. I think the reason why no trade came about was because I don't think really any team wanted the number one pick because no one really knew who to take. Do you go Wiseman? Do you go LaMelo? Do you go Edwards? I mean, there's not too – every team could use a center, but – there's only a few teams that have a desperate need for center. I think like the Golden State, that was a perfect fit. So then it's like, do you take Edwards? Do you take Ball? So I think that's why a lot of teams were just going to wait and see who fell, and then maybe their jump up. So I think that's why Minnesota just stayed with number one, picked Anthony Edwards. I mean, he's got a lot of talent, a lot of potential, so we'll have to see. And then, like I said, Wiseman, I think that was a great pick. You guys agree?
Yeah, I think I said last week that it was kind of a no-brainer that he was going to go to Golden State. But I think as yesterday progressed and we saw Klay Thompson's injury report came out, that he possibly has an Achilles injury, which is very devastating to hear after he fully recovered from a torn ACL. I think they might have been toying with the idea of drafting LaMelo Ball or Haliburton or someone else instead of Wiseman. But ultimately, I think they made the right decision with Wiseman at two.
Yeah, I totally agree. And plus, they still have some guys that they drafted last year. I know Jordan Poole. I don't know if he – I think he's more of a guard/forward that can kind of fill in for that spot if Klay does miss a long period of time. But I want to also really get your guys' opinions on pick number three, LaMelo to Charlotte. I mean, there was some of that drama back earlier when LeVar said he could beat Michael Jordan on a one-on-one. So now LeVar and LaMelo, well, not that LeVar will be playing for Charlotte, but his son LaMelo will be in Charlotte, so he might get that opportunity. But aside from that, do you guys think that was a good fit? I mean, Charlotte, kind of a smaller market, hasn't had the greatest success, especially since losing Kemba. Do you think LaMelo will be able to kind of turn that franchise around, or what do you guys feel? Cass, I'll start with you.
So I haven't really figured out how I feel about Ball. I mean, I know as we've discussed on the show last week, his work ethic is questionable. The kid has been brought up into fame from a very early on age. However, this kid was starting varsity in high school at a top program. He's been around his two brothers, who one of them is professional now. His father, LeVar, I mean, despite how vocal he is and how crazy he can be sometimes with, you know, with the whole Jordan thing, I think the smaller market actually could be better for him. You know, he has less outside pressures to worry about being in Charlotte as opposed to being in like New York or even in the Bay Area for Golden State. He doesn't also have a whole lot of superstars per se around him. So that could help him in the sense where he could kind of figure out where he fits on this team and how the guys around him can help him. But I'm honestly excited to see what he does with Charlotte. I think it was a good pick. I think it's definitely going to bring more attention to a team in a smaller market, like you said. I think having Michael Jordan owning the team, that could also help mentor Ball a little bit, maybe get some of these work ethic kinks out of him. I mean, as we know from our time discussing The Last Dance, Jordan's work ethic, it can't be matched. So I would have liked to have seen him maybe go to Golden State with the whole Klay Thompson injury news, but this Charlotte move could be very interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the key thing is Michael Jordan, and because Michael Jordan gave permission for the Hornets to draft LaMelo if he was available, which he was. So that speaks a little bit that Jordan likes LaMelo's game. Jordan knows that, you know, LaMelo could be something in this league. And I think if we had any questions about LaMelo's work ethic or attitude, I think with Jordan running the show, I'm not saying that LaMelo is going to be a perfect angel and will, you know, not have any sort of problems, but I think having Jordan leading that team, his brand being represented and just branded throughout that organization, I think that speaks volumes to what the type of success and impact it'll have on LaMelo. Josh, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you both touched upon what I was going to say, that a lot of people are saying LaMelo was the best prospect coming out of this draft class. And people obviously debate that and have their own opinions. But I think the potential is there. The small market will definitely help him, even though he seems like he has that big market attitude. But I think it'll be interesting because right now the Hornets have a lot of guards. They got scary Terry Rozier, Devontae Graham, who blew up last year, and now LaMelo. So it'll be interesting because they have basically 3-point guards, and it'll be interesting how they're used because all three of them are talented and young. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. So now I want to talk about some of the winners and losers of the draft. We talked about some of the top picks. Now let's talk about some of the winners and losers. So Josh, since you just left off, I'll let you start. Who do you think was a winner in this draft, whether a player or a team?
I think winner for me is the Sacramento Kings. They took Tyrese Haliburton at 14, I believe. And he was talked about as being the second best point guard behind LaMelo Ball. A lot of people had him basically ranging from anywhere from 5 to 10. And to get him at 14, I was really surprised to see why he was dropping so much in the draft. But this kid's a winner. He's a nasty point guard. Him alongside De'Aaron Fox is definitely going to be really fun to watch because Fox is a quick, shifty point guard, while Haliburton is more of a traditional pass first, like a 3-point shooting, fundamental type point guard. So that'll be good to watch.
Interesting, interesting. Castle, any winners for you?
So I've been kind of going back and forth between two of the top 10 picks team-wise. I think my winner for me is the Hawks. Getting who they got at number 6, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I know I'm going to butcher it. But now you have a front court of him and Capella. That could be scary because now you got Trae Young as well. You got Collins. The Hawks could be developing a very nice team in a conference that I feel has a lot of question marks, not as competitive as the West, obviously. So I would say that. And then also, in my opinion, I think Cleveland getting Okoro at number 5 was very nice too. Andre Drummond just picked up his option. It was like $26.3 million, which was really good for Cleveland. I was glad to see. I'm a Drummond guy, so I was glad to see him stay there. And I don't know, Okoro playing with him, that could also be very nasty too. So it was good to see two of those Eastern teams who haven't been really getting their name back on the map draft these two guys. I mean, yeah, they were top picks. You know, of course, you know, some people are like, you know, it's to be expected that they go with these guys. But on the other hand, as we saw in this draft, anything is possible. So I was very happy with what Cleveland and what Atlanta did with the 5th and 6th pick.
Yeah, Onyeka Okongwu, I think he's Atlanta. I think I pronounced it somewhat correctly, but
better than I would have, Steve. So I give you props for it.
Thank you. So for me, I kind of have two like you, Castle. I think the first one that I'm going to say is both for the player and the team, the Wizards getting Denny Avdija. And, you know, Denny fell a little bit. He was projected to go a little higher. Like I think I said last week, I projected him going to my Bulls at 4, but he fell to 9 to Washington. But listen, he's going to be pairing up with Rui Hachimura. I'm butchering his name now.
Rui Hachimura.
Hachimura, yeah. Oh, gosh. Some of these names are tough. But, you know, he's now a year into his NBA career. He got Bradley Beal. John Wall should be coming off his
much
injury.
Much easier to be pronounced.
So, and, you know, whether John Wall gets traded or not, if he does come back, he should be healthy. I know he's older, but still, that's a pretty nice core group you're starting to build. Then you add Denny there. I think Denny should fit in nicely with them. He doesn't have to take on a huge role trying to lead the team, because they already have some scorers, they already have some leaders on that team. And then I think the clear winner of the draft, at least for me, were the Detroit Pistons. They got three first-round picks. And some people, you know, maybe you don't like the picks they made, but you got Killian Hayes, which a lot of people were high on Hayes. They got Isaiah Stewart, a pretty good forward, big man. And then they got Sadiq Bey, another big man from Villanova who showed flashes that he could be good. I don't know. I thought that they got three solid guys to try to help turn that franchise around a little bit. Plus, you add them to Blake Griffin, learn under Blake. And I don't know. I just think, especially that Killian Hayes pick for them, I think that was a really good pick. So we'll see. Maybe they all will not really turn out well or not succeed in Detroit. I hope not. I don't want to see anyone become a bust. You know, these young guys have worked hard, but I think that Detroit made some promising moves last night. And then I want to go into some surprising picks, and I'll start off first and probably everyone's surprising, the most surprising pick of the draft, and that is Patrick Williams at pick number 4 for Chicago. You know, like last week I said, and I just said earlier, I thought maybe they would take Denny. Or I know even yesterday it was being rumored that the Bulls were thinking about trading Wendell Carter Jr. and the 4th overall pick for number 2 to Golden State and then take like Wiseman. But they stayed at 4 and they took Patrick Williams. But they like Patrick Williams. They've loved him for a while now. I think they love his size, his athleticism, especially his athleticism, and mostly his potential. They think that he can cover guard pretty much any position because of his size, his wingspan, his athleticism. He's the second youngest player in the draft. So even though it seemed like a surprising pick to Chicago, that was their guy. But any other surprising picks, unless if I'm sure you guys agree with me, because the entire NBA world was pretty shocked that the Bulls picked him there. But yeah. Any other surprising picks?
I was very surprised, like you said, with the Bulls. But some other surprising picks for me was that Killian Hayes was taken before Halliburton. You mentioned that you really liked Detroit's picks. I wasn't a fan of them. I thought they were very questionable trades. I don't really like the Killian Hayes pick. I don't think he'll turn out well, especially with Halliburton on the board. I like the Sadiq Bey trade, though. But also, and I know Castle's probably going to rave about this, but even though I personally like him, I think the Knicks taking Obi Toppin was pretty questionable. They have a need for point guard. Like, they have Julius Randle at the 4. They still have Taj Gibson. They have Mitch Robb. They have a lot of front court. Their need was backcourt. Halliburton was available. I don't know why they took Obi Toppin, who is also – he is the worst defensive player in the draft, and they took him. So I don't know if Nick fans want to call this a bust, like, and a wasted draft, but I think it's definitely one of the more questionable moves in Knicks history.
Ooh, Castle, he's coming after you. The Knicks and Obi Toppin, ain't no stopping Toppin.
Listen, I'll play devil's advocate here. Am I happy with the Toppin pick? Absolutely. I really like him. I think he's an explosive scorer. He's coming home to New York. I think that always adds an element. But like Josh said, his defense is definitely an issue. I'm not going to deny that. You know, hopefully you have guys like Mitch Robb and Randall that can make up for it. I mean, that shouldn't be the case when you're drafting a guy in the top 10. Hopefully that can happen. In terms of needing a point guard, I wasn't really in favor of it. I really like Frank Ntilikina. I think that we should start to utilize him more. So that's how I feel about the Toppin pick. In terms of what I was surprised by pick, for me, it was the Magic taking Cole Anthony at 15. I originally had saw on a lot of boards, on a lot of pre-draft boards, that he was going to go to the Heat. I was like, okay, that could be an interesting move. Bringing him into the Magic, though, it makes you wonder what the Magic are thinking, because they still have Markelle Fultz and Evan Fournier. Fournier was their top scorer last season, I believe. Fultz is not where a lot of people thought he was going to be, but he's starting to develop. And I'm just wondering now, do they see Cole as coming off the bench? Do they see him as taking over for one of these two guys? So it was just not something that I really saw with the Magic doing. I just thought it was very interesting. Was it a complete flop? No, because I do think a lot of people like Cole Anthony, but just not something I saw.
I think, especially when you start to get later in the draft around that time, most teams are sometimes not even going for needs. They're going for best player available. So at that time, Cole Anthony was the last player who was a player left who scored the most points. He was the top scorer left in the draft. So I think the Magic were like, you know what? We still don't know if Markelle Fultz is our future. He's still very young, and he did take a big step from Philly to Orlando. But maybe they still don't feel 100% confident in Markelle being their franchise point guard. So hopefully maybe they feel that Cole Anthony could be that guy. And then you got to like Cole Anthony, because UNC had a rough season last year, and usually they're a top team in the country. They were not, but Cole Anthony stayed. He didn't leave. He didn't leave the team. He didn't really complain. He still gave his all, still put up big numbers. So maybe that's what Orlando likes. It is interesting. It is an interesting pick. But I'm sure there's some sort of reason. I think it's because it's, do you just take the best player that's left at that time? So now I want to talk about some of the trades that were made before the draft. You know, there's some trades within the draft, but it wasn't too many guys. I know Ricky Rubio went back to Minnesota. He's been getting balanced. He got traded from, from Phoenix to the Thunder, part of the Chris Paul trade. And then he got traded from the Thunder back to Minnesota. Pretty decent trade. But I want to talk about the Jrue Holiday trade. I want to talk about the Al Horford trade. So what do you like, especially that Jrue Holiday trade? I mean, Bucks, I feel like they gave up a little too much to get a 30-year-old guard who is above average but not elite.
I think David Griffin needs to win GM of the Year already for what he did in that trade. He robbed the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, there's no way around that. The Bucks get Jrue Holiday, and if I'm correct, they were supposed to get Bogdan Bogdanovic also in that trade, right?
Well, in a separate trade, because Bogdan was coming from Sacramento in a signing trade, but that actually fell through, which we could talk about after.
Yeah. Okay. So then we'll talk about that later. But Jrue Holiday for 3 first round picks. I don't get that. And on top of that, the Pelicans not only get 3 first round picks, they also get a nasty defensive man in Eric Bledsoe, which he is no joke. He's a very good, strong, physical point guard. And now you pair him with Lonzo, Zion, Brandon Ingram, Kira Lewis, who they drafted. The Pelicans.
Yeah, no, listen. The Pelicans are an up-and-coming team, and they also shed Jrue Holiday's massive contract. So I get what Milwaukee's trying to do, bring in stars to pair with Giannis, but I just don't know if Jrue Holiday was the right guy. We'll have to see. Castle, what do you think about this trade? Was it smart for Milwaukee? I know they're trying to win now. It's not like they're trying to really plan for the future, because Giannis, if he if they show that they can't win, then Giannis may leave, and they don't want that to happen. So they're obviously in win-now mode. Do you think Jrue Holiday is the right guy to help them do that? Or do you think, like, me and Josh are saying they maybe paid a little too much, took on – they gave up too much. They're taking on that massive contract. Like, what do you take away from this trade?
The way that I see the trade is that the Bucks were like, okay, we know that we're in a position to lose Giannis. We're going to just put all the cards on the table and try to do what we can to keep him and try to win now. And for me, I just thought for Holiday, that wasn't the best move. I feel like they gave up way too much because in the event that Giannis doesn't stay, they just cut off a huge part of their future by giving up all those picks. So now they're in a position where they have a 30-year-old guard in Jrue Holiday and his contract. And if he leaves, and if Giannis leaves, then you still have to worry about the contract. And now you're even backed into more of a corner to rebuild. So I thought they gave up too much for him. I like Jrue Holiday, don't get me wrong. I think it was good that they wanted to get him, but what they had to give up was way too much, in my opinion. And I really do feel like there's a good shot Giannis leaves. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Milwaukee handles all this.
Yeah, Milwaukee better hope that this works out. And Josh, you said earlier David Griffin for executive of the year, but hold your horses. I think Sam Presti of the Thunder deserves that. I mean, this dude.
I agree with that.
Right? He has compiled, what is it, 17 like picks through 2026? I think it's 17. Like, it's some absurd, crazy amount that they were saying last night in the draft. I think it was including some picks from last night. I mean, oh my God. I'm like, I lost some words of how he's been able to pull off all these trades. He got, you know, you gave up Westbrook last year to bring in Chris Paul, and you got a first-round pick from them. You got all those picks from Paul George, who kind of struggled last year with the Clippers, and when they needed him to step up in playoffs, really didn't. You then trade Chris Paul for more first-round picks, plus some a big group of young guys. And then you, yes, they have taken on Al Horford in that contract, but I'm pretty sure they got another first-round pick from that. Like, he's just wheeling and dealing, and he's been flipping a lot of these guys. I'm not surprised if Al Horford gets moved, like, next week for – I mean, it'll be tough to get a first-round pick, but if Sam Presti's running the show, I wouldn't count it out. So, like, are you guys impressed with him?
It seems like it's a competition right now between Sam Presti and David Griffin. Who could out-GM the other? Because it's like – it's ridiculous at this point, the amount of picks that they're racking up. The future for both of those two organizations are just incredibly bright. And while the Thunder just lost CP3 and a lot of people think, oh, this is going to be a down year, they still have Shai Gilgeous. They still have Steven Adams. They got Kelly Oubre from the Suns. They could still sneak in, be a low playoff team. And then the Pelicans almost made the playoffs this year. They got Zion. This will be his first healthy season. They got Brandon Ingram. It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Castle, what do you got?
I agree with Josh. It really does seem like a competition between these two organizations. I give them a lot of credit, though. Both GMs, they're really just trying to work with the talent while they have – work with the talent they have while building up a huge part of their future with these picks. I've started to like this Pelicans team a lot. Like Josh said, Zion's first full healthy season, that's going to be huge. Brandon Ingram, I think the Pelicans getting him was huge. Lonzo Ball is starting to play better. I think he's going to have another solid season. And I think the Thunder could sneak in too. I really do. And I also don't think that Hortford's going to stay with the Thunder. Just going off that trade quickly, I was very surprised by it. I guess Philly didn't like what they fully saw out of him. I thought, you know, maybe it was just too much having him and Horford and him and Embiid and all those guys. Maybe it was too much. I don't really know. But when I saw that trade, I was surprised. I guess Danny Green will add something to Philly. I don't know what. Maybe more of a shooting element. Maybe a vet guy coming off the bench. I don't really know where they see him. But you got to give a lot of credit to the Pelicans and the Thunder. And on top of all the talent that you have in the West, in my opinion, those are two teams that you got to focus on this season. Just what they've been doing in the offseason.
Yeah, no, definitely. And when back to your point about Horford and Philly, when they first signed him last year after his contract ended up in Boston, I didn't like that contract. I thought it was a bad move by Philly, and it was. Luckily, they were able to shed it by trading him. They did have to give up a future first-round pick because that was just a massive contract. I didn't like his fit with Philly. So, and then like I said, and you agreed with, I think Horford doesn't stand the Thunder. I don't know what team he's going to go to. But I know the Thunder want to get younger. They're willing to get these guys. That means future first-round picks. But they don't want him playing there. Maybe he'll play a few games there this season, then get traded at the NBA trade deadline. But I don't expect his career to end in Oklahoma City. And then the Chris Paul trade, last year acquiring him from Houston for Russell Westbrook, that was a great move because his leadership, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander learned under him. A lot of the other guys learned under him. And look what they did. They made the playoffs. And then now you get rid of Chris Paul. He's another year older. He's getting old. He's getting up there. That massive contract where he's making almost $40 million now this year. And you bring him and you send him to Phoenix for a core group of young guys, like I said earlier. And Josh, you were mentioning Kelly Oubre. So now they got a young core group with, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander taking that huge step that he did last year. And then for Phoenix, I think it's a good trade for them because you get to pair him with Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. And I think he's the kind of guy that they needed, that he'll put them over the edge, at least for playoff contention. I don't think they become contenders for the finals, but I think it's a good move by both sides. And that's why I've been so impressed with Sam Presti, what he's been able to do, flipping guys, and they still have a pretty talented roster for all the moves they have made. And then they just have so many future draft assets that they can either use to try to get a superstar or just draft, and hopefully they draft a star of their own, superstar of their own. So it's going to be interesting and should be a bright future for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think now we can maybe talk some possible trade rumors. I don't know if there will happen. You know, there's been a lot of rumors with guys, and it's just tough to talk about because it seems so real. But then the teams, I don't know, James Harden to the Nets. I know, Josh, you might like that. I don't know. Personally, I don't think so. We can start off with that one. I think it would be a bad move by the Nets, in my opinion. But, Josh, I want to hear your thoughts since you're a Nets fan and what you think about this possible trade.
I mean, being in the situation that we're in, we're already, I'd say, a serious threat to make a deep playoff run with the team that we have. But you add in someone like James Harden, and, yeah, we'll have to give up a lot. I believe we'd have to give up Caris LeVert, Torian Prince, and either Jared Allen or Spencer Dinwiddie, which it's going to suck losing Dinwiddie, LeVert, or Jared Allen. I could care less about Torian Prince. And then picks, because if David Griffin and Sam Presti are setting the standard for Drew Holiday to be traded for 3 first-round picks, I assume James Harden will be worth more. I think, though, it's worth it. We made a trade yesterday at the draft to get Landry Shamet, who I don't know if he'll be involved in the James Harden trade, or if not, he's a very good bench piece. 3-point shooting and defensive guy off the bench. We still have old man Jamal Crawford. We have Tyler Johnson. We got Garrett Temple. We got these pieces on our bench that make it worth it. all of these stacked teams who build like a big three, they say big threes don't work because there's no bench, but I think the Nets make it work because we have a deep bench. We have DeAndre Jordan off the bench already. Like, he's a good center still in the NBA. So if we're able to get someone like James Harden, we do it because he only will just make us better. And I don't see it being an issue of chemistry between Harden, Irving, and Durant because they all are basically recruiting each other to play in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, that's where I disagree with you. I just don't think – I mean, Harden and Russell Westbrook didn't work out, and they used to play with each other because Harden now is not that backup, you know, six man on the bench guy who moves a ball. He wants a ball in his hand almost at all times. Kyrie Irving likes to have the ball in his hand most times. Kevin Durant, same kind of thing. I think Kevin Durant's the best facilitator, guy who moved the ball the most out of Kyrie and James Harden.
I agree.
So I just think, yes, a guy like James Harden, you would think like he's been one of the top players in this league now for quite a few years. He's won MVP, right? Is he, right? He won recently. So, like, yes, you would think, oh, you got to get James Harden. But I don't think it's as easy as, especially if you have to give up so much. Listen, I think that, and you haven't seen what KD and Kyrie are like together. You have not seen that at all because KD was out the entire year. And then Kyrie played a little bit, and then he got hurt. So how are you just going to throw James Harden immediately into the mix when you haven't even seen what KD and Kyrie play like together? I just think that, to be honest, it would almost ruin what you guys have going for you, in my opinion. Castle, what do you think?
Steve, you covered what exactly I was going to say. You're bringing Harden into a team that hasn't even fully played together yet. Not only that, but they have a new coaching staff too. So if I'm a Nets fan, I would want to see how the season plays out with Kyrie and Durant playing together at full strength, how these other guys do, like LeVert, Dinwiddie, Allen, and then maybe reevaluate. But the fact that those are some of the guys that you would have to give up for Harden in a system that's still in its early a new system that's still in its early stages, it's too much of a gamble for me. I'd like to see the Nets do well this season because of the moves that they made. I like Steve Nash. I like Amar'e Stoudemire. I like the moves that they've been making, and I just don't want to see that get ruined by doing a big trade for Harden. So as much as Josh, I'm sure you would love to have Harden come to Brooklyn, as much as Harden has been saying he wants to play in Brooklyn, I don't think it's a move that they should really jump on right away.
I think it's tough, though, because KD, you said, is the best facilitator of them all, and I agree. KD doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time in order to win games. Kyrie Irving, I think, has improved on that. And while a lot of people still like to think that Kyrie Irving needs the ball in his hands 24/7 in order to succeed, I don't think that's necessarily true because he came to Brooklyn knowing that he will be with Kevin Durant, who between the two of them, he doesn't care who takes the last shot. And he's openly said, I feel like this is the first time in my life I don't need the ball in my hands to win a game with Kevin Durant, which is kind of disrespecting LeBron James when he was in Cleveland. And then you add in James Harden. And if Kyrie already says he doesn't need to take the last shot, he's got Kevin Durant. You add in James Harden, any one of those three would be able to beat any given team on any given night. One of them could struggle and the Nets could still be able to win out games. And I think that's a dangerous thing. And that's what gets like all of us Nets fans like very excited to think about. So I think when we have this opportunity, you gotta go after it.
Listen, and that's a solid point. but I don't always trust what Kyrie Irving says, because he says some crazy things, and you just can't trust what any player says, because it can say one thing and then you see, and even just not even about like playing, but like, you know, they say, well, I'm fully committed to this team, and then you see they want out. Like at James Harden, it was reported that he wants to stay in Houston, that he's committed to Houston, and now there's reports saying that he wants out of Houston and mainly to Brooklyn. So anything can change, and any guy can say anything at any point, but then sometimes they don't back it up. So we'll have to see what comes about with that. And then, Castle, I know, I mean, maybe this doesn't, I'm sure it will intrigue you. Maybe you don't want it, but may not be a bad move. But Russell Westbrook to the Knicks, possibly? I want to hear your thoughts first before I, me and Josh offer some of our thoughts on it.
So at first, I was like, absolutely, let's bring Westbrook into New York. Let's do it. Let's finally get the superstar that we've been longing for a long time. Now I'm not so sure, honestly. You know, I like Westbrook. I think he's a very talented guard. But I'm not really sure if he's the guy. I'm not really sure if how well he'll do in the market in New York. I mean, if you look at where he's played in Oklahoma, which is a mid-market in my opinion. Then he's moved to Houston, which is a little bit bigger of a market. Now you're bringing him into New York, which is one of the biggest markets in all sports.
If not the biggest.
You're bringing him into a team with an owner who's not liked at all, who's had a lot of issues with driving players out. And I'm just not sure if Westbrook's personality is really going to blend well with New York. So as much as I would love Westbrook to come, I'm not sure if I'm in favor of the trade anymore.
Yeah, I'm. That's how I'm kind of feeling. I think that's how some Knicks fans that I know are feeling. I can't say for the whole fan base, because like you said, he is that superstar that the Knicks need, that to say like it's okay to play here. Like you have a superstar, and they're like, whether he's committed or not, like you finally have that superstar that you've been missing for a while, pretty much since Carmelo Anthony. Because Kristaps is good, but I wouldn't say he's a superstar, but Carmelo Anthony was the guy. But like you said, I just don't know. You know, Westbrook, yes, he's a veteran, but he comes with a big contract. Like you said, he comes with a lot of stuff. Sometimes his attitude, not that it's really been a problem, but like you said, within that organization, it's, I mean, now that you got Leon Rose running the show, and I think that's the main reason why Westbrook would go the Knicks, is because of connections with Leon Rose. I just, like you said, I don't know if it's the right fit. Again, he's ball dominant. You want a guy that can help RJ develop. Now Obi Toppin develop. But is Westbrook really going to be that guy that's going to be able to? Because I'm not going to say, like, you can't have RJ trying to, you know, run the court and bring the ball up and take every shot. No, but he still needs his fair share of doing that. And if you get a guy like Westbrook, I don't know if that'll be able to be done. So I don't know. I think maybe for the right price, maybe, but if they have to give up too much to take on that contract and him, then I think you just wait and either try to appeal to someone in free agency or try to make another trade. Josh?
Yeah. Or you pray that Dolan sells the team.
Well, I'm sure that's on every Knicks fan's list.
Yeah, I think even as a Ranger fan, I agree that Dolan sells, but that's never going to happen. Sorry, Castle. But I agree with Steve and Alex that I think the Knicks should target Fred VanVleet. He should be their top target, because the culture that the Knicks have been trying to establish for years and failing miserably actually looks like it could be built into fruition. If you get a guy like Fred VanVleet, he's a young but a very competitive point guard. He doesn't need the ball in his hands to win. He doesn't give up on any plays. He's a winner. He already has a chip with Toronto, and he blew up. And that's when we actually learned who he is. So I think the Knicks should go after him and make a push for him instead of going after Westbrook, because they're going to give up way too much for Russell Westbrook. Probably give up Mitchell Robinson or RJ, which would be a huge mistake, because he is a part. They're both parts of their future.
Oh, so yeah.
Fred VanVleet, who they could just sign in free agency, would be the smartest move for them.
Yeah, definitely. And plus, a lot of these guys now that the Knicks have, like you said, with the culture, like RJ, like he wants to go to the Knicks. He wants to go to the Knicks, and he's glad to be part of the Knicks. He's trying to turn it around. We saw last night Obi Toppin was very emotional about getting picked by the Knicks. He's coming back home, even though he's from Brooklyn. Brooklyn would have been his real homecoming, but still, it's still New York. So you're getting guys that really want to be part of the Knicks culture and to turn it around. And I don't know if Westbrook would want to be part of that, but maybe a guy like Fred VanVleet would want to be part of it. So Castle, I'm rooting for your Knicks to turn it around, because, you know, the NBA is not the same with franchises like the Knicks, my Bulls, just being at the bottom of the, you know, standings year in, year out now, especially the Knicks. So let's just hope they can turn around some way, somehow. And turning things around a little bit, we'll go from the NBA and now talk a little bit NFL. Week 10 recap. I know, Josh, your Jets didn't play. Castle, your lose. Giants.
We didn't lose this week. It's amazing.
Yeah. You were not 1-0, but you didn't lose. So I guess it's a win for you guys. Castle, your Giants pulled off an impressive victory over the Eagles for the first time in how many years?
Since 2016, baby.
Yeah, really impressive. And then my Bears just suck. So, Cass, I want you to, you know, talk a little bit about the Giants, kind of what you liked from them this week. And I'm not going to lie, the future's looking brighter and brighter every week. You're on what, a 2-game win streak now, right?
2-game win streak.
And you're in that division.
We're in the NFC least, as I like to call it. We got 2 back-to-back division wins, which is huge. I think the biggest thing is that whether you're a fan or a player, you're starting to buy into Joe Judge. I think Judge is really starting to create a product that Giants fans have been longing for. But aside from that, it's just the little things that helped us. For example, Jones, his second game in a row without turnovers. Huge. He's starting to clear those mental mistakes, which is what Garrett's been telling him all season, which was great for me to see. I'm also very happy with what the running game has done without Barkley. Wayne Gallman has been really stepping it up. I know some Giants fans have spoken to have been like, I'm not sold on him. Well, I'm starting to buy into Gallman. Is he Barkley? No. But he's a guy who can get through the holes, who can get into the end zone when you need to. He's athletic. I'm a fan of him. Also, you got to give credit to Alfred Morris. This is a guy who's been up and down for a long time. He's with his third team in the NFC East. He's been having some solid reps for us. I've been happy with him too. Jones has been able to move the ball out to our receivers. I believe all of our receivers had big catches that game. Even Butterfingers Evan Engram made a great catch. But I think the biggest credit that you got to give to, and what I've been happy with this with the most, is the defense. This defense has made a huge turnaround. Blake Martinez, Leonard Williams, Dalvin Tomlinson, I could keep going on. But, you know, it's just been a great team to watch these past 2 weeks. They're starting to get better. They're starting to clear their mistakes. Listen, if Cleveland beats Philly this week, and if we come back from the bye week and beat Cincinnati, we're at number one. I don't care if, you know, some people say, what about drafting a pie and this and that? Why don't we actually see what this team could do first before we start talking about what we could do next? So I've been happy with the team. I hope that, you know, this bye week, we continue to pick up the momentum. Going into a bye week with a win is always helps. And overall, I'm just starting to see a different product for the Giants that I've been very happy with.
Well, it seems like the big thing with the Giants is that the guys have bought into Joe Judge and what he wants, what he preaches, and they've, by buying into him, they are playing hard, not only for themselves, for him, but just like for the Giants. And I don't think we saw that the past couple years with Pat Shurmur. And I think you guys got a good group of guys right now that are playing, that want to play there, similar to the Knicks. You know, you're getting guys like that want to be a New York Giant, which maybe the past couple years it's been tough saying that because of the struggles. So I think that Joe Judge is doing great things there. And like you said, Cincinnati, that's a very winnable game. Like, you guys, like, you, like, keep seeing what you can do. Don't just say, well, you know, we got to make sure we get a top draft pick. Like, no, like, you can still get a talented guy throughout the NFL, like, especially this draft. There's a lot of talented guys. You don't need the number one pick to get a talented guy, the number two, number three. So, you know, if you're in that division and you can get some playoff experience, then go for it. And then meanwhile, for the Bears, I might say the opposite, because we need a lot, man. It's like when we were 5-1, it seemed like, I know that it wasn't the most dominant 5-1 showing, but it was still, hey, listen, we're 5-1. Now that we've lost 4 in a row, 5-5 going into the bye week, I don't want them to play again after this bye week. I just want their season to end. I just feel so bad for that defense. That defense is so good. And I'm not just trying to be biased. Like, I feel like most of you would agree with me that defense is really good. They play hard week in and week out. They keep us in every single game. But then our offense is just so horrendous. And Matt Nagy gave up play calling. This was Bill Lazor, our offensive coordinator's first game calling plays. It didn't look any better. If anything, it might have looked a little worse. I think that's not really on Bill Lazor. He was still, he only had like a week to prepare, and mostly he was probably just using Matt Nagy's plays, just maybe calling different ones or trying to see which one would work best. Nick Foles, I like Nick Foles, but he's not the guy. He's not what he used to be. I don't hate him as a person. I respect what he's done in this league, but I don't think it's paid off. Our O-line is so bad. This is just making Allen Robinson just want to probably leave more and more, which sucks because he is such a threat. He is such a great receiver. I love him, but I know I'm probably going to have to prepare for him to move on. So it's been a tough stretch. It's really making me like ponder switching teams. So that's why, like, part of me is, like, glad that we're losing because we're getting a better draft pick, because whether we go try to get a better pick for a quarterback, really, which is what we need, or for an offensive line, I don't know, but we need something. And then it kind of brings in, like, you know, I like Matt Nagy, but maybe it is time to move on and definitely get Ryan Pace out of there. So it seems like now I kind of feel like Josh at the Jets.
Welcome.
Yeah. I don't want to be in this club, though.
Yeah, no, it's not fun. It's brutal.
Yeah. It's just, especially when the Bears have, like, so much potential, and they're just not reaching it. So that's it. And then week 11, Castle and I are both, the Giants and Bears are both on byes. So the Bears have a week to collect their thoughts, kind of, who are we? What are we going to do? The Giants, hopefully you said, ride that energy high. Say, listen, like, you know, we're playing well now. How can we use this bye to get better? And then, Josh, your Jets are back in action. I know you're probably thrilled about that.
I'm surprised the season hasn't ended yet. But if we could play like the way we played against New England, I'd be okay. Like, going 0-16 is definitely going to suck. And I do worry about this weekend because we got the Chargers, and a lot of people are saying this is the most winnable game. And with the way the Jaguars have been playing compared to us, like, if we played every game like we played against the Patriots and we somehow find ways to win, that'll definitely ruin our draft stock and chances of getting a good pick, which definitely frightens me. Being so bad that we are losing out on the first pick would just be embarrassing at this point. But we still got some good teams to play at some point, so I'm not giving up my hopes yet. And we are the only winless team. But we'll see. I guess stay tuned to see if the Jets make it out alive or not.
Well, listen, I know Jacksonville lost last week, but they competed with Green Bay with Jake Luton or Luton or whatever however you pronounce his name.
And they got Pittsburgh though this week, so.
Oh yeah, so they don't have good matchups, but they haven't been playing as bad as they probably should be. So Josh, you're the only guy going this week with your team, but we're all in fantasy football, and I know some of our viewers play fantasy football, so let's give them our startums and sit-ums. And you know, Castle, I'll let you start with yours.
Yeah, since you lost last week, you get to go first.
So just quickly recapping my picks last week, you know, kind of shot myself in the foot. I said, you know, start Marvin Jones. And even though I didn't need to start him on my team, he was on my bench. He ended up getting over 20 points. Sorry about that, Steve. I know you had Hockenson, but Marvin Jones, he ended up killing it last week.
Hey, that's okay. I actually ended up going against Hockenson, so it worked out.
That did. But in terms of this week, who am I going with? So my first pick is, and Josh, I know you're going to love this one, is Tyler Boyd with Cincinnati. They're coming off a bye week. Since he's coming off a bye week, I've liked Burrow. He's rated the number two rookie in the season, number two rookie quarterback behind Justin Herbert. I also like the Bengals matchup this week. You know, Washington, they're known as a – yes, they're overall, you know, one of the better defenses this year, I believe, ranking-wise. But they're more of a run defense. And I think Mixon is still hurt, right, Josh? Mixon's still injured.
Yes, he's out this Sunday.
So Mixon's still hurt. So they're going to be running it with Bernard, who he's been on the team for a long time. But I can just see Burrow looking to go to the pass game more. A.J. Green hasn't really been doing a lot. Higgins, he's been doing well, but Tyler Boyd's been the guy. He's the guy that's been putting up the numbers every week for that team offensively. He's been a huge guy in fantasy. So if you got Burrow, start him. And then the other guy I want to talk about to start is A.J. Brown. Yes, the Titans will be on the road at Baltimore, but Derrick Henry last week ran for less than 100 yards against Minnesota's defense. And Minnesota, yeah, they've been getting some – they've been squeaking out some wins, but I was expecting a bigger game from Henry, and we know what type of team Baltimore is. So I'm expecting them to put a lot of pressure on Henry again, having some difficulties putting up his typical numbers. And I'm thinking Brown's going to be a big target for Tannehill. I think he's going to get a lot of reps. I think he's going to give Baltimore secondary a tough time. So if you got Brown and you got Boyd, whether they're at your number one, number two, if you're fortunate enough to have either of them at the flex, I don't know how, but God bless you. If you've got A.J. Brown and Tyler Boyd, I say start them this week. I think they're both going to have solid weeks.
Well, I do have A.J. Brown, so hopefully he – in one of my leagues. So hopefully he'll do good. And then Tyler Boyd, and the Bengals receivers have been pretty impressive with Burrow, so we'll have to see what comes about with that. And then Josh, let's hear yours.
I love the Tyler Boyd pick. He's my flex, so that's good to hear. And I'm looking forward to that matchup. Once again, I'm sorry for whooping you last week, so shout out DeAndre Hopkins with that amazing Hail Mary catch that sealed the deal. But my picks, I'm going to start with someone who's facing the Jets, because, you know, that's what all of us Jet fans love to see. And I'm going running back Kalen Ballage. And he's an interesting one. He's now the third or fourth string running back, but because of all the injuries to Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson, he's turned into the primary back. And he's put up 15 and 16 fantasy points in back-to-back weeks. And he's playing the Jets defense, who obviously is on the field a lot because the Jets offense can't stay on the fields. And the Chargers offense, they control the ball for like about 34 minutes a game, as opposed to the Jets, who hold the ball for 26 minutes, which is a big difference. And the Jets defense has allowed 30-plus points in the past two games, and have allowed 30 or more points in 5 of 9 games this year, which obviously is a lot. So I think a guy like Ballage will see a lot of action and have a good game. And my second stardom is someone who you might like, Alex, and you've had him before, and that's tight end Hayden Hurst, Atlanta Falcons. And there's a lot of question marks about Calvin Ridley, whether he's going to play this week or not.
Hope he does. I need him to.
Well, regardless, Hurst is a big guy for Matt Ryan to throw to. The Saints defense against tight ends, they've allowed 10-plus fantasy points a game, including 300-plus yard games. And Hayden Hurst has put up double-digit points in 4-plus games already this year, 4 straight. So I think that streak will continue against a defense that allows a lot of points, especially to tight ends.
I love the Hayden Hurst pick. And again, I have him, so that just makes me feel even better about starting him. So I guess I can get mine. The first one that I think people should start if you have him is Damian Harris. And Harris, the running back for the Patriots, he's coming off his third 100-yard rushing game of the season. And I know the Patriots have quite a few good backs. They have Sony Michel, James White, Damian Harris. Well, it's still unsure if Sony Michel is going to be activated off the IR. He's still hurt. And Damian Harris is going against the Texans defense, who has allowed 5.53 yards per carry, which is most in the NFL. So if Damian Harris ran the ball pretty well against Baltimore's defense, who usually is pretty good at stopping the run, then I expect Damian Harris to have quite a good day. He may not score, but I think he should get around that mark of 100 yards or more. So I think he'll be a pretty solid option this week. My other start is, I loved him out of college. Of course, he went to the Vikings, Justin Jefferson. I mean, he has 4 games this season with over 100 receiving yards as a rookie, and he torched the Bears secondary, which, not to be biased, but I think is one of the strongest, best units in the league. Kyle Fuller's been playing great. You got Eddie Jackson back there. Jalen Johnson, rookie's been impressive, but he still went for over 100 yards against them. And to make it things better for Jefferson's case, he's going against Dallas's defense, who we know in that secondary allows the 5th most points to wide receivers. So I think the Vikings now, they're starting to play well. Kirk Cousins got his first win on Monday Night Football ever, sadly. So they got some momentum going, I think. And then Justin Jefferson's just too talented. And then you got a guy like Thielen, which is going to get a lot of attention. So I think Jefferson's got a great matchup. And if you have him, I would start him. So now we'll go to the sit-ems. And Josh, we'll start with you. Who should people sit this week?
My first one is a running back on the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's James Robinson. And he's been balling out, and I love this kid. He's a rookie, but he's playing the Steelers this week, so I really don't like him starting. He has run for 100 yards in 3 straight games. He's a threat in the run and the pass game, no matter who's under center for the Jaguars. But against the Steelers, the best run defense in the league, I don't feel comfortable starting James Robinson. If you have another running back, I would start him instead. And the second one is Amari Cooper. And Cowboy fans, you probably are thinking, oh, we're about to be a playoff team in the NFC East. We got our savior, Andy Dalton, starting this weekend. But no. They're still the same old Cowboys. They're going to suck. This is going to be an awful game against Minnesota. It's going to be a defensive game. So whichever defense you have, you'll probably be happy. No offense will do well. Andy Dalton is coming off a concussion and COVID. The throws to his receivers won't be there, whether it's CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, whoever. They won't get their targets. He won't have a good game. Just bench him or bench any Cowboy offensive player because they won't be good against Minnesota.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And the James Robinson pick is, he's been one of the best fantasy backs and just one of the best running backs in the league this year. But he does have that tough matchup against Pittsburgh. So I do agree that if you have other options, I would sit him too. But if anything, maybe put him at flex and try to play another running back at the running back slot. So be interesting to see what happens there. And then Castle, who should people sit?
So both of my sit-ems actually have to do with tonight's game. My opinion, it's the game of the week. Got the Seahawks and you got the Cardinals. Last time these two teams matched up, it was a shootout that ended in overtime. So I think it's just tough to say who's going to be good, who's not. So my first sit-em is the Cardinals defense. And here's why. Like I said, last game was a shootout. Yes, they have very good guys on the team. They got guys on the rise, like Isaiah Simmons. But with the amount of weapons that this team has, it's very unpredictable to say if they can contain if they can contain Russ and if they can contain the offense. With that being said, also, I gotta say, if you absolutely have to start him. But if you can sit him and you got another quarterback, I say sit Russell Wilson, honestly. I really haven't been impressed with his last two games. He's been turning over the ball more than usual. Just hasn't seemed like himself almost. And, the Cardinals is definitely going to be a huge test for him tonight. He knows what he's going up against in this defense. It's a Thursday night game. Hopkins is coming off this insane catch. So, the team's just going to be amped up overall. And, you look at where Wilson was in the first game versus the Cardinals, and now it's tough to say if he can put up the same performance, if he can have that shootout, if he can really utilize Metcalf and Lockett. Maybe Chris Carson runs the ball more this game. Maybe they look to the running game more. Who knows? But if you can afford to sit Wilson, sit him. If you got another defense, as much as I love the Cardinals defense, I think it's going to be tough tonight.
No, then you're spot on that. Russell Wilson has not looked, especially what he did look like in the earlier part of the season. I mean, he was kind of like the clear-cut favorite to win MVP, and now he's falling, which I feel bad because he deserves it, but his play recently has not proved that point. So it'll be interesting to see how that game goes tonight. I know I got Kyler Murray going, so I hope Kyler just goes off against Seattle's defense. And then I guess I can give my two sits. Why not? So the first one I got is Todd Gurley.
I got Gurley.
You got Gurley. Well, Castle, if you got other options, I would maybe look to sitting him. He's not the guy he once was. But listen, he has scored in 7 of their 9 games, but he only has one game with over 100 rushing yards. He doesn't really rush for yards anymore. He's more just scoring, which, gets you a lot of points, but he's going against the Saints defense that has allowed only 2 rushing touchdowns in 9 games. That's an impressive stat. So I don't know, especially since Drew Brees is out. If you're Atlanta and you know that the Saints defense is pretty good against against a run, you think Atlanta's going to try to just air it out early to try to get a big lead over their division rival. So I just don't think this is a favorable matchup for Todd Gurley. So, yeah, I would say sit him. And then my other sit him is a member of Josh's Jets, Jamison Crowder. Now he is their best receiver. Josh, would you agree? Right. Yeah,
I'd say so.
So, but he's more Sam Darnold's guy. Joe Flacco didn't really look for him in the Monday night game. Then they had the bye week. So, listen, Joe Flacco could target him, you know, 20 times this game. But in the Patriots game, he didn't seem like he was targeted that often. And the Jets offense, they did look better and against the Patriots on that Monday night game. But still, they looked really good in the first half. Then second half, they didn't really have too many yards offensively in the second half. So, I don't know. There's still a question mark with the Jets offense. And then he's going against the Chargers defense, who isn't the best. But against receivers, they have allowed the 6th fewest fantasy points per game. So, that's it. In terms of the Chargers, that's a good matchup for the Chargers, but maybe not Jamison Crowder. So, I don't know. I just feel like, and obviously I know Jamison Crowder wouldn't be a wide receiver one, wide receiver two spot. A lot of people may plug him in at their flex. I would say if you have another guy for the flex, put him in for Crowder, because I don't think Crowder will have the best week. So that's all the stardoms and sit-ups, and that pretty much wraps up our show. But before we go, breaking news broke during the show that Klay Thompson suffered a torn Achilles and is out for the season. That's just devastating, horrible news, especially since he just came back from rehabbing from a torn ACL where he missed the entire 2019-2020 season, and now he'll unfortunately miss the entire 2020-2021 season with the torn Achilles. So, Klay, you know, listen, dude, you're one of the game's best right now. Please just, you know, we're praying for you, and we hope you recover as soon as possible, because you're great to watch on the court and you're a great person off the court. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with Klay Thompson. So that will wrap up the season finale. It was a great season making the show with you boys, and I'm looking forward to next season. But just because we're not going to, you know, take a little break from making shows, we're still going to produce content and post daily on our Instagram account, which is at
3P Podcast.
3P Podcast. I was getting there, Josh. And then, so make sure to follow up with that. And then, you know, just keep listening to the episodes we post. And before you know it, we'll be back to producing some more shows. So thank you for all our listeners, and happy holidays, and stay safe. Thank you.